Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. So, did you feel it? Yesterday afternoon, an earthquake centered near the tiny town of Mineral, Virginia, startled millions of people from Maine to Georgia and disrupted life in some of the nation's biggest population centers. Seismologists said the earthquake measuring 5.8 was unusual, but earthquake activity is not entirely surprising for the region. Buildings were evacuated and cell phone service was overwhelmed. Many thought at first it might be a terrorist attack. It was over quickly, with little damage, and gave Californians an opportunity to poke fun at Easterners who were panicked and didn't know how to respond. This morning we'll talk about earthquakes in Ohio. Could it happen here, and how should we prepare? Joining us right now, Michael Hansen. He's Senior Geologist and Seismic Network Coordinator for the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. Welcome back, Mike.
Glad to be here, Ann.
NPR reported that a group of geologists were in a meeting yesterday when the East Coast earthquake struck. It took them 10 seconds to realize it was an earthquake, and by then it was half over. So everyone was taken by surprise, but earthquakes are not as rare as most people think, right?
Oh, no. They occur very frequently, of course, around the world, especially in the Pacific Rim. We have hundreds of them per day, most of them quite small, but certainly some in this range that we felt in Virginia. But here in the eastern United States, it's a relatively rare occurrence to get an earthquake in a 5.8 magnitude.
Can we talk a little bit about 5.8 and what that means, relatively speaking, and put it in some perspective? For instance, the earthquake in Haiti, or off the coast of Haiti.
Yes, that was a 7.1 magnitude earthquake. And of course, that's quite large, and we saw very significant damage there for a number of reasons. Number one, it was quite a shallow earthquake. It was very close to a densely populated area, and certainly the most important factor was very poor building construction, and the buildings just basically fell down. But when we're talking about energy and size of earthquakes, for each whole number increase in magnitude, the earthquakes are about 32 times bigger. We can look at this, for example, a 5 magnitude earthquake. If we take a 6, that's 32 times bigger. It's a logarithmic scale, and a 7 would be about 900 times bigger than a 5.
How deep was the one yesterday?
It was at, USGS put it at 6 kilometers, which is about 3.5 miles deep, and that's considered a very shallow earthquake.
Which could explain what? I think what was curious to me when I looked at the map of where the reports of the earthquake occurred, all the way out to Columbus, but they were only pockets. How does that happen?
Well, I think you're probably referring to the USGS map where people submit reports.
Yes.
To it. Yes. I think that's probably not completely accurate. That depends on who fills in a report. So, and of course, most people don't. I looked at the map this morning, and they have had 122,000 felt reports submitted via email, which is a huge, huge number. But from the phone calls I was getting, it was certainly all around the state of Ohio, just about every corner of the state, people reporting feeling it. But I think a lot of people just didn't bother to go to a website and report it. There are other factors, however, as well in there. Certainly, some people would not feel it because if they're moving around or something like that, or in a car or driving. But people sitting quietly are more likely to feel it, and particularly in upper floors of buildings, because the buildings tend to sway during an earthquake. Sometimes people on ground floors don't feel it. For example, I did not feel it, and I'm on a ground floor.
My guest is Michael Hansen. He's Senior Geologist and Seismic Network Coordinator for the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. We're talking about that 5.8 magnitude earthquake that occurred yesterday afternoon. If you have a question or comment for Mike, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Give us a call and tell us if you felt the earthquake, where you were, and what happened. It's so exciting for us in Ohio to have something like this happen, but people also on the East Coast as well didn't really know what to do.
Certainly, they're not experienced with this. Mm-hmm. In California, where people are constantly drilled and chained to how to respond to an earthquake, those people do know what to do. Here, it's totally surprising. I would suspect that most of the people that felt this earthquake had never experienced an earthquake with this type of shaking before.
I was a friend of mine this morning told me that she was in a meeting with her staff, and everybody around the table had a different experience. Now, some people looked up and saw that the table was shaking, but otherwise, some people's ears seemed, their inner ears seemed to go crazy. Some felt dizzy, others didn't. Is that typical?
Yes, you hear all kinds of stories of people. I've heard of people yesterday being nauseous from the earthquake, and others experienced all kinds of phenomena. I suppose that depends on the individual and their interpretation of the event. But it was certainly a good shake for a lot of people, and certainly the people closer to the event in Virginia and Washington, D.C. and so on, they felt it quite strongly.
Office buildings were evacuated in New York and Washington, D.C., the Pentagon, the White House, Capitol Building, and monuments. Some reports said that that's exactly the wrong thing to do.
Well, especially during an earthquake, the greatest danger from an earthquake is things falling on you. There's an old saying that earthquakes don't kill people, but buildings do. And if you're standing in the middle of an open field in a very large earthquake, you're unlikely to be hurt from it. But if you're in a building and you run out the door, a lot of times things fall off of these buildings. And that can be quite a danger if it falls on your head. The best thing, of course, is to get under a heavy table or a desk or some sort of protection.
What about aftershocks? There were some aftershocks. I was wondering, too, so now that there's been this earthquake, should we expect more, or what do we make of it?
Well, typically, any earthquake of this size is going to have various kinds of aftershocks. There was a 4.2 aftershock last evening, and there have been a number of smaller ones. Usually those things tail off through time and become smaller and smaller as time goes by. This is simply an adjustment of the crust. As the crust has moved along this fault, there's some instability there, and as things kind of readjust, you get aftershocks. We're not likely to have any really very large aftershocks from this event, such as we saw in Japan, where we were getting aftershocks there in March of 7 magnitudes. But this will probably die off in a matter of weeks.
Let's talk a little bit about the history of earthquake activity in Ohio. You and I have talked before that Ohio could, actually Nashville, I think you said, was near where the next big one would occur if it were.
Well, the New Madrid Seismic yeah. Zone, which is along the Mississippi River area, New Madrid being a small town there in Missouri, was the site of the largest earthquakes ever in the continental United States in 1811 and 1812, where there were at least three earthquakes in the 7-plus magnitude range and thousands of them in the 4, 5, and 6 range. And those shook the whole eastern United States. We don't have much report from the western U.S. as it was fairly unsettled. But those things would cause tremendous damage today. We do know that they knocked down chimneys and damaged buildings in Cincinnati, with more than 300 miles away from the epicenters. So that's definitely one of the big concerns for the central United States, is a major earthquake there. And in fact, this year is the 200th anniversary of the first event in December of 1811, and many states in the zone have had emergency exercises. And indeed, we did have one here in Ohio, conducted by the Ohio Emergency Management Agency in May, where a number of state and federal agencies participated in that exercise as if there had been a 7.7 in New Madrid, and how the state would respond to that.
So how would the state respond when so many of us who live here are completely clueless when it comes to earthquakes? In fact, one of the reasons why they did evacuate buildings in Washington was because there was a fear of terrorism attacks.
Yeah, that certainly is on everyone's mind since 9/11 occurred. And when people feel something like this, they're not sure what it is. In fact, I had an email from one of our station operators at Bowling Green State University, who was actually in D.C. at a conference, and he described that everything just really shook, and the chandeliers were swinging back and forth. And of course, he knew it was an earthquake right away, and told everybody that's what it was. But he said people were just totally panicked by it, and they all ran out of the building and so on. And that's a typical response, but because people just aren't familiar with that in the eastern U.S. And when we look at 5.8 magnitude earthquakes, the recurrence intervals of those in the eastern U.S. are very long. So generations may go by where they never experience this, and people tend to be familiar and respond to things that they felt before. But if there's no history of that in their lifetime, that they really just don't expect it and don't really know what to do with it.
There were, you know, on Facebook and things, there were pictures of the damage from the earthquake in Ohio, and there were like chairs tipped over and that sort of thing. You know, jokes. And sure. Even on the East Coast, there were pictures joking about the damage. There was some significant damage, though. I think the National Cathedral sustained some damage. The Washington Monument had some cracks at the top. So it did do some damage, and you're saying they had a lot to do with how shallow it was.
Yes, that's very true. There are two factors in damage. It's certainly the proximity that you are to the earthquake, that is how close you are to the epicenter, how shallow the earthquake is, and, of course, the size of the earthquake. But the other factor that enters into this is the type of materials that buildings are resting upon. We find that if a building is built upon bedrock, it tends to shake much less than if it's on thick, unconsolidated sediments. Because those tend to amplify the ground motion, and we see more significant damage. So along, for example, river valleys where we have thick fill of sediments deposited there by the river, that tends to shake a lot more than on bedrock. And in fact, the reports from the 1811-1812 earthquakes in Cincinnati indicated that the people living in Cincinnati along the Ohio River were awakened by many of these shocks and so on, whereas people living on the Bedrock Hills weren't awakened by them. So there is a significant difference there.
What's the likelihood that we'll feel aftershocks as far away as Ohio from the episode yesterday?
I think that's pretty unlikely, just simply because of the size of potential aftershocks. I haven't heard of anybody feeling the 4.2 last evening, although a few people may have. But most of these aftershocks are probably going to be in the 2 and 3 magnitude range, and those aren't felt very far away from the epicenter.
Okay. Well, Michael Hansen, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it today.
You're welcome, Ann.
It's Michael Hansen. He's Senior Geologist and Seismic Network Coordinator for the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. Coming up, an open forum, so stay with us and think about what you want to talk about. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and you can get access to our station anytime online at WOSU.org. Hear local and national news all day, every day, from the convenience of your computer by streaming on the web. Listen to 89.7 NPR News anytime online at WOSU.org. And our website has a new look. Check it out and tell us what you think.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Home Instead Senior Care, providing companionship, dementia, Alzheimer's, and hospice support. More at 1-800-4-SENIORS. Home Instead. To us, it's personal.
67 degrees in downtown Columbus. It's at 10:20 this morning. Cloudy skies today, becoming partly sunny and a high near 90. Mostly cloudy tonight with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low of 69. Sunshine for Thursday and milder temperatures, a high of 81. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
It's an open forum. What do you want to talk about? There's lots of stuff locally. There's the city's push to revive the South Side. Let's see. You know, there's always Senate Bill 5, but I'm actually, aren't you all a little tired of talking about that right now? Maybe you want to talk about discussions or the lack thereof between the governor, legislative leaders, and opponents of Senate Bill 5 a little more specifically, and what you make of those overtures by the governor and legislative leaders, all of whom are Republican, of course, and the refusal by opponents of Senate Bill 5 to join them in talks. What do you make of it? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm still interested in talking about earthquakes if anybody out there is interested in talking about them. It's fun to hear the stories about where people were and what they thought when it occurred. Don't be shy. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or you can go to Facebook, the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. We check that pretty regularly. And you can tweet at Ann Fisher, WOSU, if you want to communicate that way. So what do you want to talk about? Sounds like Paul wants to talk about Senate Bill 5. We can do that. And Paul, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Well,
Here we are back again.
I think I felt the earthquake, but I was listening to the national radio program that originated from D.C., and they started to react, and I said, well, okay, that's what that was, so I guess I must have felt something.
What did you feel? Did you just, like a train going by kind of a thing? Or?
It wasn't that drastic. It was on the second floor of the house and on a computer, and it was for what I felt was pretty mild. My wife was at work, and she said that she felt it pretty distinctly. So it was, it was definitely a lot of people felt it. It was,
yeah.
And kind of concerned because not knowing what it was and so unusual for this area.
Right.
I remember back 30-some years ago, I was sitting on the Drexel, not Drexel, the Bexley Theater in Bexley. Can't think of the name of it. Anyway, and watching a movie, and there was an earthquake that we felt pretty distinctly, too. But I don't remember the level of that one. But anyway, what I wanted to point out about pay cuts and benefits and whatever for state employees, and I was a state employee for 30 years, and the last couple of years we certainly didn't get any pay raises, and with the furlough days, you know, that's a pay cut. Sometimes I don't think people realize that.
Yeah, when you don't just get the day off, you lose the pay.
You lose the pay, and one thing they did do, which was the union insisted on, and it worked out quite well, was instead of taking that 8 hours, 16 hours, whatever it was that you took on a given pay period off, they spread it out over the period of the year, so that they just took a little bit out of each paycheck, so that when you took your day, you still got money. You didn't just get hit with the whole day off, but your paycheck was less than for each paycheck was less every paycheck.
State Senator Shannon Jones earlier this week said that there have been concessions across the state, but that has been spurred by Senate Bill 5. But you're saying
concessions predate Senate Bill
5.
Yeah, they certainly do. And she had an interesting attitude about the whole thing. I wonder how. I don't know what her background is or what she's done before she was senator, but I was rather frustrated in listening to her yesterday. But my main point was going to be that when they start talking about, okay, the employees have to pay their full 15% or the X number of percent of health care and X number of percent of in the retirement system, which as a regular state employee, we were paying, I think it was, when I left, it was 12% or something like that.
which was more than we paid before. But every time you get one of those shifts, one of those increase in paying more of a percentage for your retirement, more of mm-hmm. a percentage for your insurances, that effectively is a pay cut. Because mm-hmm. if you're not getting a pay increase because of the cost of living increase or the step increases or whatever, that's less money that is coming into your pocket that you have to spend to go into the economy. So it's more complicated than what it appears to be on the surface, because it's a pay package. Just like most people, benefits are part of your whole income and pay. When you're working for somebody, your benefits are included too. But it's real easy to say, well, make the employee pay more of this or that. And they said, well, they haven't had a pay cut for such and such. Well, when you do those kinds of things, you certainly do. And I want to make a point on that, because I think that's kind of ignored and just glossed over a lot of times.
All right. Well, thank you, Paul, for giving us a call.
Have a good one.
You too. Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You want to talk about Senate Bill 5-2?
Yeah, I just wanted to remind your listeners. First of all, thanks for taking my call. Second,
you're welcome.
I just want to remind your listeners out there that prior to this, Kasich did not want to negotiate at all. I remember listening to him on several other radio stations. One commentator in particular down in Cincinnati.
Right.
He said, listen, take a 2-week break, sit down, then come back to the table and negotiate. Kasich took a hard line. I'll never forget this. He said, no. He said, sometimes the time for talking is over with. And he said, now it's time to act. And he says, we're going to act. And that really upset me back then, especially now when he wants to negotiate and sit down with everybody, because it looks like it's not going to fly with the voters in November.
Some people are saying, though, that the margin of victory for the opponents of Senate Bill 5 is narrowing, which it always does,
right.
And that people, that a certain percentage of voters and people in Ohio would rather see them compromise, because, you know, there's parts of Senate Bill 5 that a majority of people support. Are you concerned about that? That it looks bad when both sides don't at least step up to the table?
Well, no. I mean, I agree there are concessions that can be made on both sides, but you know, the unions came back and they said, listen, you take it off the, you go ahead and put a referendum on it, you pull it back, and we'll go ahead and not take it to the ballot. And they didn't want to meet then, so I guess it's just going to be up to the voters and see what happens. Then we'll go from there.
All righty. Well, thanks for the call, Chris.
Thank you.
Take care. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. It's just me in here. We have an open forum going on, so if you want to chat about whatever, Senate Bill 5, maybe we could talk about Libya. We're spending about $2 million a day in Libya, but we don't have boots on the ground there. What do you think about if Libya falls, if and when it falls? It looks pretty clear that it will. It's just a matter of when. What sort of participation by the United States would you like to see? Give us a call and let us know, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Did you feel the earthquake? Everybody has to, I forgot to ask Chris whether he felt the earthquake or not. Tell us if you felt the earthquake and what you felt, in addition to whatever you want to talk about, because I'm curious. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We hope to hear from you. So the rebels have gone after Gaddafi's compound in Tripoli. Still, he's nowhere to be found. I thought it was kind of interesting this morning. I listened to reports from the BBC this morning on public media on WOSU 89.7 about the fact that there apparently is just a catacomb of tunnels beneath the compound, and there could be many, many people, including Gaddafi, perhaps, holing up down there. And so there's the above ground takeover of the compound, but the below ground takeover is supposed to be much more dangerous, probably filled with booby traps, that sort of thing. So what do you think about the United States and how we should participate in that case? Of course, Syria is standing by watching with great interest. Syria's very close with Iran, makes it strategically for the United States a little bit different situation, a little bit, in some ways, a little bit more important to our foreign policy decisions. Give us a call. Let us know. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have a lot of callers waiting. I just need one to get one on the line for me. We've got several. Stephen's coming up next. We'll talk to Stephen about earthquakes in Ohio. Yay, Stephen. Hi, Stephen. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I was sitting on the couch in the living room studying, and I just felt a slight sway, and then it got a little worse. And I was thinking at the time, I actually years ago built a seismograph from Scientific American, you know, amateur scientist article, and it felt like it being on a swing and somebody pushed you about a foot, and then it kept going. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, if it was that big when, you know, if it's that big of a push here in my location, then you could think of all the mass on the surface of the earth that had to be moved like that. I mean, how much power that is. It's just unbelievable how, you know, even though it was only a 5.8, the extent of the movement was just phenomenal to me. I don't know.
It's interesting when you describe it that way. It makes me think about what somebody described it, that they thought there was an inner ear problem. Their inner ear was going crazy. And I remember when I did have vertigo one time, a serious case of vertigo, it felt like someone was pushing me on a swing. In a bad way. Since you weren't on a swing, you knew right. Did you know right away it was an earthquake?
Yeah. But the idea that all this mass from, you know, New York to Ohio to all, you know, this perimeter, 500-mile diameter or whatever, you know, whoever felt it, mm-hmm. all that earth had to move because of that. In that motion that you felt that swing, so the amount of power behind that, to me, just, I don't know if somebody can actually get on there that knows what they're doing, talking about, and say, you know, what's the actual force in inertial kind of physics, you know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
I think it's an interesting, how much energy is generated, how much energy was spent on that. Michael Hansen was with us, a senior geologist and seismic network coordinator. He's not with us anymore. But if anybody out there knows and understands the physics of earthquakes, give us a call. 614.
Thank you,
Stephen. Take care. And thanks
you
for the
too.
Call. 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Mark in Lincoln Village, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. I wonder if anybody remembers the earthquake in the late 70s. I was in the house listening to the radio, and the Led Zeppelin at the radio station skipped. And I was like, well, this is kind of different. This is back when they had vinyl.
Vinyl, right.
And about the earthquakes, it's tectonic plates going over and each other, and as it slips and moves out in the Pacific, there's the whole thing that they call the Ring of Fire. There's volcanoes and earthquakes all around there. The Earth is a living thing.
It is. You know, Paul in Bexley mentioned that he was at a theater in Bexley 30-odd years ago when that earthquake hit, and he remembers it from there, too. So, you said you were at home.
Yeah,
the record
home.
Skipped on the radio, and did everybody know immediately it was an earthquake?
A lot of people walked out of their front door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
And they looked around and looked at me, and they said, did you feel that? Yeah, I felt it.
Did you feel it yesterday?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
No, ma'am.
All right.
Have a great evening.
Thanks.
Afternoon.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You too, Mark. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Mitchell, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You support Senate Bill 5.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I've been paying my retirement. I've been paying for my medical, and it kind of bothers me that I pay a lot more than the 2% these union people are wanting to.
Well, we just had
a
guy on who says he retired, I think, last year or so, but he says he paid 12%. He was a state employee, and he was paying 12% for his health care.
Yeah, I'm paying about 25%.
That's a lot.
I don't really want to pay the balance of his either. But the people who are currently paying their insurance and their retirement, they're not paying 12. They're being asked to maybe go to 5 or, you know, 5 more. But, you know, I don't really have the money to pay for theirs. They have a job, and they would like to have more than, think, their share.
Actually, I think they do pay a lot more than 5%. State employees do. I mean, Paul said he paid, or whoever it was called earlier and said he paid 12. You're saying you don't believe him?
I don't believe him. But, you know, what I had heard is they're being asked to pick up 5% more. And if they don't pick it up, then I'm going to have to pick it up. And they're not going to pick up mine, so why should I, you know, pick up theirs? You know, I'm not very happy about that. And then they're always saying that the unions were locked out of the negotiations. Well, that's not completely true. They were offered an opportunity, and they declined. Both when the Kasich did the second time, you give them a second opportunity to come back and negotiate. And when the first one, they just decided, no, we don't need to do this. And the only reason I think Kasich is not going to put it off of the agenda is because now the unions will have absolutely no reason to negotiate. And I think there is room that should be negotiated, but unions are not. They're going for everything.
Tell me, the governor hasn't said what it is that he would be willing to negotiate on. What do you think the governor should be willing to talk about with the opponents to Senate Bill 5?
That's a good question. No one seems to know because the unions haven't decided in their, you know, that they don't want to bother at all.
Yeah, but I've asked the governor's been asked. I talked to Shannon Jones, the sponsor of Senate Bill 5, and what do you think they should be willing to negotiate on? She doesn't want to negotiate on anything, and so far the governor has said he's not really doesn't plan to change anything.
Well, I don't think you said that. If someone says, come to me and talk to me, tell me what you want, we'll go from there.
Okay.
Well, the unions have said, no, we're not doing anything until you take it off the ballot. Well, that tells me that they're not willing to negotiate whatsoever. And at least if they went there and they said, this is what we will work on, this is what we won't, if that's what Kasich would say, then they would have a position to say, we're not negotiating on that, either side. But right now, they're just burying their head in the sand and betting that population's going to support them. Well, I'm not supporting them. Mm-hmm. I think it's time for them to negotiate and get rid of some of these perks that they have in this the Democratic way. I give you a lot of money, you get voted in, now you got to vote for me, and by the way, we want collective bargaining. Well, collective bargaining is not doing this company, this state, a favor. Now, there are safety issues safety should be paramount. And if you're in that career field, you need it, you'll get it. And the union said, well, we won't get any safety issues. I don't think that's true. But that sounds like a strong rallying cry.
Yeah, I think that was amended. I think that was amended in the legislation that they would be able to negotiate safety-related issues. So, well, Mitchell, thank you for your call.
Okay, bye.
Take care. That was Mitchell. We were talking about Senate Bill 5. He supports Senate Bill 5, and he thinks that the unions and the opponents of Senate Bill 5 should get to the table and talk to the governor about possible compromise. So far, the governor hasn't offered up any kind of ideas, but the unions have said they want it fully repealed before they'll talk. What do you think? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an open forum. You can talk about anything you want. It doesn't have to be Senate Bill 5. It could be the earthquake yesterday. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. ¶¶
Supporting 89.7 NPR News is easier than ever when you become a sustaining member. Sign up online at wosu.org/sustainer. As a sustaining member, your donation is automatic, monthly, and ongoing. No more letters in the mail, and your WOSU member card will renew automatically. Every year, we'll confirm your membership, and you can cancel at any time. For as little as $5 per month, you'll be supporting the programs you love. Become a sustaining member now at wosu.org/sustainer.
This is 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins with a discussion of binge drinking on college campuses. Join us for that beginning at 11. You may not know it, but fractals, like the air you breathe, are all around you. Their irregular repeating shapes are found in cloud formations and tree limbs, in stalks of broccoli and mountain ranges. Tonight on WOSU-TV, NOVA takes viewers on a fascinating quest with a group of mathematicians determined to decipher the rules that govern fractal geometry. Watch NOVA, Hunting the Hidden Dimension, tonight at 9 on WOSU-TV. Cloudy skies today with some sunshine peeking through those clouds later this afternoon and a high reaching near 90 degrees. Clouds tonight with showers and thunderstorms possible, a low of 69. Mostly sunny for Thursday and a high of 81. A few clouds Thursday night, a low of 62. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
It's an open forum. What do you want to talk about? We'll talk about it with you. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't forget about Facebook. That's another option. And so is Twitter, @FisherWOSU, if you want to tweet us. Ray in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You oppose Senate Bill 5.
Yes, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I am the vice president of a chapter at a state agency, and it was very interesting to hear some of the absolute misinformation that Mitchell was just spouting. And I understand that a lot of the public doesn't understand what really is the case. Senate Bill 5 deals with any public employee with one brush as far as collective bargaining goes, and we're not all paint from the same bucket. State employees do pay 12% or more for their retirement. We do pay 15% or more for our in health insurance benefits.
Mm-hmm.
There are many local, city, county agencies that don't pay for their health insurance or their PERS or whatever retirement system they have.
But state workers do.
State workers absolutely do. And we have gone, as a caller before mentioned, he recently retired, we have gone several contracts without pay raises over the past 10 years. We haven't had every contract without a pay raise, but the majority, if we've had three contracts in the past 9 years, which I think is correct, we've only had one contract in there where we got pay raises, and they were about 2%. So the idea that, you know, we make great money and we have all these benefits used to be the case when collective bargaining first came in and there was a real big push towards improving our position. Currently, it's not the case. Teachers, great packages, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Firemen, but they give up something. Firemen give up, you know, they have a risk factor in theirs, as well as do any other safety
Ray,
people.
Let me ask you something. Some people are bothered by the security that public workers have.
Teachers,
that's a big issue with the teachers issue, with teachers being bad teachers, you can't get rid of them. And the same has been said about public employees. You can't get rid of a bad public employee.
I can tell you, as a steward and the former chief steward, now the vice president, if you're not doing, and I happen to work out in the field, so I'm not at work today because I'm getting ready to go to our convention that we have starting tomorrow. We're going to elect potentially new leadership for our union.
Mm-hmm.
So I have today off and the next 2 days off. However, if you are not doing your job, whatever is required of you, you're not going to have your job. We have people fired in our agency. We grieve those automatically because it's a right that the member has with our union. We frequently lose those grievances. Occasionally, we win those grievances, which means the person is reinstated. You will lose your job if you're not a good employee and you don't want to do your job and you're going to say, well, my union's going to save me. Ain't going to happen. It just isn't going to happen. We have people who have thought that, and those people lost their position with our agency, and they don't have a job with the state. It just is not true. Do you have a benefit? Do you have protection against a bad supervisor or certain circumstances? Yes, you do. But even then, the number of reviews in a grievance by a third party or, frankly, by management who gets to make decisions as well is not one where, oh, well, we're sorry, we're going to let you keep your job. It's one where common sense and the law is at play. And once those reviews are had and everybody gets to see the situation in the light that it should be seen in, usually the right thing happens. I can't say that about every single time, but that doesn't mean that it's going our way either. Mm-hmm. It may be going their way.
Well, I appreciate you giving us a call.
All right.
And take care, Ray.
Thanks, you too.
Take care. Well, I was going to take another earthquake call, but they hung up. So moving on now to Tom in Westerville. Welcome to the show. You are very pro Senate Bill 5. Welcome.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And by the way, great show.
Thank you.
Big supporter of NPR. Been listening for over 20 years.
Yay.
I was very disappointed with the Republicans when they defunded all public radio. I think that that was a travesty. With Senate Bill 5, in my opinion, I have not seen one person in power, including John Kasich, take a pay cut, give back insurance, take a furlough day, even offer, you know, to give back holiday sick time. And he makes over $100,000 a year, which is not the case for most union workers. And that is one of the biggest problems I have with this, because it's always the people that doesn't have a voice or power that is always expected to sacrifice. And then the people that are most able to afford a pay cut don't take them. And
so are you for Senate Bill 5 or opposed to it?
No, I'm for Senate Bill 5. I'm all for the workers. You know, and all workers, including non-union workers, need to fight for our rights.
Are you for issue 2 on the ballot? In other words, you want to repeal Senate Bill 5?
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry.
All righty. Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I thought I was getting a pro Senate Bill 5 person on because I want to alternate, but it looks like it's all against anyways, so
yeah,
it doesn't matter.
You know, and it's, you know, and it's like even with, you know, all the things that John Kasich's done, I think this needs to be the first step in getting him out of office.
Well, some people say it will be something of a referendum on the Republican leadership in the legislature and also the governor, John Kasich.
It really needs to be, because it's like, you know, I am so tired of looking at people that can't afford to have their teeth fixed. There's nobody that has visual insurance unless you can afford to pay for it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's like, if we don't stop what's going on, there's going to be two classes. You know, in this society, it's going to be the extremely rich and the extremely poor. And, you know, and if we don't stop it now, our kids are basically going to be the poor, and they're not going to have homes. They're not going to be able to afford food, you know, and, you know, it's like they're turning back the clock 100 years before the Industrial Revolution. And, you know, we need to stop this now.
Well, I mean, some people might argue that, yes, the times, the organized labor and that sort of thing was right for the times. The times have changed. We don't have the way beyond the Industrial Revolution now. We're in the Information Revolution, the Service Revolution, I guess. Things like organized labor and guilds and those kinds of things should change with the times, and they haven't.
Well, you know, and that is an argument. And quite frankly, at this point, we really need to band together, meaning the working poor, because there's really not a middle class anymore, and take back our rights. And not only that, but put in place where, you know, people can afford the basics. And what I consider one of the basics is health care. You know, and, you know, when you're making $10 an hour, and you're having to pay $127 a week for insurance, what's really left over for you and your family?
Right. Well, Tom, I want to get a few more people in.
Okay. And, you know, and I did want to say one thing about the earthquake.
Okay. oh, all right.
every time that there's been an earthquake, and I think there's been three since I've been alive, I've been driving. I was driving it, everyone. A caller earlier mentioned the one back in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
I was just learning how to drive. And, you know, and when we came back from our drive, you know, everybody was excited about the earthquake. And lo and behold, even on this one, I was driving from Coshocton to Zanesville.
And you didn't feel a thing?
Pardon?
Did you feel it?
No, not at all. You don't feel the earthquake.
When you're already moving, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Maybe the fourth time's a charm, so.
Yeah.
All right, Tom. Take care.
All right, and keep up the great work.
Thank you, Tom. Email from Georgia. She supports Senate Bill 5. I think she opposes Senate Bill 5. She says, if we don't defeat the intended agenda of the right wing at this early step of crushing unions, we will slide further down the scale of becoming a third world country dominated by corporate interests. In addition, Kasich needs a serious attitude adjustment so he can begin to overcome his arrogance. Email from Angel. She has an idea for retirement age and wants to talk about the earthquake. I think the governor and the unions may want to negotiate the retirement age for some union workers. Teachers can retire in their 50s, so maybe they could raise the number of years they work to receive their pensions. P.S. I did not feel the earthquake. I'm from Southern California, and that earthquake was nothing. With a triple exclamation point. We have just a few more minutes. I'm trying to get to, how about Don, and we'll switch the topic a little bit. Don, in Cincinnati, you want to talk about the Marcellus Shale formations and the type of drilling that will have to occur and mining that will have to occur to get the natural gas and oil out of them. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Basically, the drilling as it affects the aquifers that must be somewhere in the region is the Marcellus, and I understand there's a second range, even at I think it starts with an E, and it's even larger, I suppose, in the same area. But these ranges, the chemicals that are used, Mr. McGraw, who was speaking, was very careful to say that there's no surface water contamination. He repeated that about two or three times.
The fellow that I interviewed who's written the new book.
Right. He didn't say anything about any effects of the aquifer or low water transfer, you know, low underground water transfer of the chemicals from wherever they're at, even if there's a real large water supply there, on out into the lakes. Nothing was really said about that at all that I could discern. I asked a question earlier about the water when he was there, and he was only able to talk about how gas naturally occurs in Colorado with drinking water, but he didn't really speak much to any of the other points that I had to raise.
Well, he's going to join us again someday, he said, so I hope you're listening.
Well, could you comment any yourself on these aspects of the location near the lakes and any kinds of aquifers that could be in the region?
Well, all I can say is the same thing that he was saying, is that the reports, I mean, it's not really clear that that is a problem over long term, although he did say, didn't he, that there could be unintended consequences that create situations where it's pushing the gas away or into aquifers because of the pressure of the fracking. It's the unintended consequences. But Don, I have no pretense of being an expert in this area. So
I was just concerned about his lack of response to the questions. Basically, I guess is my whole point. Like I said, he spoke to naturally occurring gas and water in Colorado,
right.
and very little.
He was responding to the movie.
That
documentary.
Well, that was one of my points, but mm-hmm. I had several others, like I say.
Well, lots of times when people have several points, it's hard for a guest to get to all of them because, that's part of the problem. We try to keep things, keep people down to one or two ideas. And I'm being told I'm running out of time, so right. Keep listening, Don. Appreciate it.
Fine.
Take care. We are running out of time. If Bill in Clinton Township, if you could make it quick.
Oh, yes. I think a lot of this Senate Bill 5 negotiations and all that could be cleared up. We simply taxed compensation, period. If it's a fringe benefit or whatever else, their pay. It's part of their pay. And therefore, if the unions want to negotiate somehow using total pay, which they're taxed on all the way, to move it into benefits or not, who could care? That's their total compensation. That's what the employer pays. And we're the employer. In the case of public employees, but there are a lot of employers out there who aren't. So that's my top. That was my concern. They weren't focusing on the real issue, the loopholes in the tax system.
All right. Bill, thank you for your call. And thanks to everybody for your call. Sorry we couldn't get to you today. Got very busy very quickly. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.